And restored my faith in life, concluded Captain Montevalnese. He straightened out his gloves to the last finger, laid them down on the table, and gazed at Monica. She could only gaze at the Alps. It was solemn, wonderfully like church. She was 22. This, her third proposal, seemed a distinct echo. The Alps, so distantly brightly painted over the bright lake, offered no inspiration, though from this very terrace they must often have been consulted. His passion, however, was of the purest. He was a Milanese of good family, and he was still waiting. She didn't know what to say. The evening of her arrival, in April half-light, they discovered themselves advancing towards each other down an immense corridor. They trod a magenta carpet, fresh as the spring season. To this, in passing, he'd lowered his eyes, delicately. At dinner, he, from his distant table, gave their party his courteously veiled attention. Naturally, it had been Dagmar who, ash-blonde, made play with her dark eyelids. Yet Monica had what her French friend, the Baron de Besserat, called a je ne sais quoi. That night, this had been in evidence, had been remarkable even to Uncle Porgy. And heaven knew he was preoccupied. Uncle Porgy, lifting his glass to twinkle in the pink lamplight, paid Monica a tribute. She is a damn pretty girl, and a good girl, too. Yet all the time, under the table, he'd been pursuing Dagmar's foot. When hers withdrew, his gave chase with audible pounces over the parquet. The pursuit gained in speed and compass, until there seemed to be no place under the table for the feet of a good girl. Uncle Porgy was not anyone's uncle. That was his disappointment, he said. He had no niece. He'd invited Monica to call him uncle also, since she was Dagmar's cousin. And when he invited her to accompany them to Italy, Dagmar declared she must. So Monica gently bounced across Italy in the back seat of the Rolls beside the valet. Captain Montevalnese now tenderly coughed. Life, replied Monica, is so difficult. I place my life in your hands, he said helpfully. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Captain Montevalnese. So she got up carefully, as though balancing his life. She needed time to think. He understood perfectly. He kissed her right and her left hand, then returned them both regretfully. She walked away between the attendant tulips. Captain Montevalnese brought out his pocketbook from against his heart and made some calculations. He sighed. He was not a rich man. Then he went round to the garage for another look at the Rolls-Royce. The Angelus came sweetly across the lake, but Dagmar, sitting out on her loggia, frowned at a tulip tree in extravagant blossom. She was beautiful, but that does not keep a girl going forever. And nothing could have been more provoking than Uncle Porgy, who was kissing his way up her arm. Don't mind, she said, and pushed at his head crossly as Monica stepped through the window. Darling, where have you been? I've been so lonely. We've been talking about Rome. Uncle Porgy, straightening his tie, smiled at Monica in the friendliest way possible. Might not Rome be jolly? He knew of a thundering good hotel. But it's so far, said Monica, and had, with surprise, a small pang. The heart, then, was not intact. The afternoon after their arrival, Monica had taken a walking stick and the hotel dog, and walked by high-walled alleys down to the lake. Here she had come upon Captain Montevalnese, engaged in sadness. He patted the dog. I love dogs, he said. It is almost a madness with me. In the course of their conversation, he had forthwith explained he was a solitary man, a widower. It was fortunate that he loved nature. But in the heart, he said, of so much beauty one feels oneself alone. Sport, he had said, was also a madness with him. It was to be seen that Monica was a sports girl. That was on Monday, since it had all blossomed. And today, Thursday, there was talk of going away to Rome. I'm sorry you don't like Rome, Dagmar said, discouraged. It sounds to me so historic. Uncle Porgy, if you're going down to the bar, let Alessandro know that I'd like a sidecar and he'll set it up. Uncle Porgy patted Dagmar's knee, then trotted down to the bar. Dagmar yawned and kicked one of her gilt-heeled slippers across the loggia. Monica blushed with honesty. Dagmar, I do think we ought to be clear, you know, about Uncle Porgy. I had no idea when we left England that he was so much not an uncle as all that. Oh, dear, Dagmar said, resigned. I am so stupid. I never know what anybody's talking about. After all, Monica, men aren't everything. I've never allowed them to count in my life. She should know. Men had not been nice to her. She'd had to break off several engagements and leave a husband. Uncle Porgy called her his brave little woman. Monica said, as a matter of fact, Captain Monteparnasi wants me to marry him.
Wants you to what?
Marry him? Who does? Captain Monteparnasi. Oh, him. It's a pity his legs are like that. He was a cavalry officer. He must have held on to the horse very tight with his legs. Even so, they are short. I do like him best sitting down, but he seems very idealistic and fond of the open air. Italians are fearfully passionate, said Dagmar gloomily. I know a girl who got bitten by an Italian. But as I said, that's just their way. Does he make love in English? Monica said, he tells me about his life. Oh, that kind. Really, I don't know what you'll do in Rome with all those Italians. I think you're marvellous. Look, you must introduce him to us after dinner. After all, I am your chaperone, and Uncle Porgy is practically your guardian. The introduction was not a success. Uncle Porgy could not somehow stomach a dago, but did his best. Monica, in pale pink, found herself sitting closer to Captain Monteparnasi than she'd expected. He attentively looked at Dagmar, who wore her air of floating lily-wise on the social current. They sat grouped together by an indoor fountain.
They are nervous, said Captain Monteparnasi, pointing to the goldfish. Goldfish are highly nervous, impossible to tame.
Oh, I hear you are fond of animals.
I had a horse once that was shot under me.
Oh, dear, whatever did you do then?
Horses, said Uncle Porgy, like women, temperamental, fickle, never know where you have them.
And, oh, horror, his foot went creeping towards Dagmar's. It would make any goldfish nervous, exclaimed Monica quickly, living under a fountain. Her friend replied, one accustoms oneself to everything. He behaved, in fact, with infinite sensibility. But afterwards, out on the terrace, he confessed he didn't care for her aunt's lover. He didn't find him an English type. But you, he added, are my flower pure, and kissed her shoulder. Behind them, the band thrilled in the empty ballroom. She felt quite his own. But she felt bound to explain. She's not my aunt, and he is her uncle. He exclaimed, my flower, kissing her as low as her décolletage permitted. Oh, I don't think... But murmuring indistinctly, he had begun to be rather Italian. She'd never produced this effect before. Then she thought of her mother at Chislehurst, and of her old school of which she hoped never to be unworthy. And from the night air, or because heaven had intervened, she sneezed loudly and uncontrollably. Stepping back from the portico as she went in, he accepted her good night. It became once more evident that his passion was of the purest. How much relieved she was. In the course of the next day, Monica found herself, by imperceptible degrees, engaged to Captain Monteparnasi. That night she received with surprise but gratification what appeared to be the betrothal kiss. He left a rose in her place at dinner. Afterwards they danced together in the empty ballroom. Then a terrible thing happened. They'd walked down the terraces and among the lemons and cypresses had a conversation about infinity, touching also upon ideals. The conversation with some caresses in character with its subject naturally prolonged itself. When they returned, the hotel was shut up, not a light shining. Such a thing as this had never happened to Monica.
She reproached her Guglielmo with some sharpness. She leaned on the door and sniffed with so much despair that he was provoked to ask her point blank if she really were an heiress. She sobbed, "Indeed not." He comforted her politely. He said, "You have always your charm." It was a long time before anybody came. Then the night porter was horrified. Dagmar was worse than horrified. She was surprised. She pointed out this was not what one expected. Next morning, curled up in bed, she said it seemed obvious that they must now go at once to Rome. The night porter had told the waiters had told all the chambermaids. She said Uncle Porgy was really very much shocked. Till now he thought of Monica as a nice friend. "Well, really," said Monica. "I tell you how it'll be, Monica. You will end by having a baby. A girl cannot be too careful." "Well, really. And an Italian and everything." Trembling with indignation, Monica sped down to the terrace for Guglielmo. But courteously, he bowed to her through a crowd. The terrace was dark with Italian ladies who sat about him. This morning, as a surprise, his relatives had all come out by train from Milan. His aunt, his mother, his widowed sister with her children, his sister who had still to marry and wore a dark moustache. He was pleased. He'd missed them. He was accustomed to family life. They sat in black, with black furs in the ardent sunshine. In so large a family, necessarily, there has always been a bereavement. Dagmar, looking down from her loggia, knew that her cousin could not have sinned with a man with so large and black a family. And once more it seemed unlikely to her that Monica ever would sin. For Monica, it was simpler. As he stood up to bow, she really noticed his legs for the first time. She'd never loved him. Naturally, however, she was still very much upset. She snipped the head off a tulip and walked away. It was her only gesture. His family evidently were great with some information. They exchanged glances, and soon it transpired they brought good news. His unmarried cousin Liliana, who had so tenderly asked for him since their childhood, had become last Friday, through the suicide of an uncle, direct heiress to the Piselli millions. So it became his duty to hurry back to Milan. Young men might already be on her doorstep. Now, his cousin Liliana, though no sports girl, did not keep him up past midnight discussing infinity. He was seriously tired this morning and had a slight chill on the liver. Not without emotion, he shortly afterwards wrote his farewell to Monica. "You restored my faith in life," he wrote. "You could not have done more. But there are sterner calls." Meanwhile, his mother, a woman of tact, quietly packed for him. It was not till months afterwards that she heard how nearly he had been entangled with an English girl of doubtful reputation. 20 minutes later, the Rolls-Royce, bonnet turned towards Rome, passed the little party on its way to the station. Dagmar remarked, "How is it that good Italian women are always dusty?" Uncle Porgy had no idea. Monica, eyes shut, hoped this might be the last she would hear of virtue. But she was not to be so fortunate.